If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
It's actually Anna DeBlantis in for John today. John, as we said earlier, was in for Steve Cochran this morning. So I'm in for John, he's in for Steve, and both of them will be back Monday, where you normally hear them. Happy Friday. Yay, it's the weekend. Made it. How many weather records did we break this week? Felt like it was
too
a rough
many.
Week, doesn't it? And you know, let me, I don't know if you feel this way. Tell me if you relate to this in any way. But when the weather in Chicago gets above freezing, it makes the world of difference in terms of how people come out, utilize the city. They're not just getting from door to door trying to get what they're doing, you know, getting what they need to get done. You see people come out and it's like it's no big deal, right? I was at the dog park. I showed up at the dog park on Tuesday. Nobody's there.
Yeah,
I brought my dog.
You don't
She's
go
like,
out.
What are we doing here? So I was like, okay, today I brought my dog. There. Everybody's there. It's like this active scene. I found parking downtown a couple days ago, like two different parking. I had a couple different parking spots to choose from. Never happens.
Yeah, it's weird. And strange enough, you're right. It's just kind of that above freezing mark. But once it's lower, we avoid being outside for any second longer than we have to.
And especially, I think, just because it hits so early. We had this Snowvember and everyone wasn't ready for it, I suppose. But it just does feel like the city comes alive again and everybody's out and it's like no big deal, right? You know, you even put away the puffy coat or two. You know, the gloves that you were using on Monday and Tuesday. You don't need them today. You don't need them.
Yeah, as long as you don't feel like you're getting slapped in the face when you know, the air hits your face. You're,
right. Well, you do need some gloves, but you're right. The wind is not great or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's tolerable. This is we're Chicagoans.
We can do this.
As I was leaving work the other night, I think it was Tuesday, I was like, I feel okay. But then I thought, oh, I remembered I have like 18 layers on, so that's probably part of it. And there was no wind chill at that time, but for instance, personally, I don't take the bus because it goes on Lakeshore Drive and that's where I get dropped off, because then I have to battle the wind when I'm walking
bad.
Up to my street. And so I don't know about you. I don't know about you, Lauren. Do you drive?
I do.
Okay.
And I'm fortunate that I can avoid being outside because where we park is attached to the pedway.
Oh,
that helps. Because then you don't deal with that wind off the lake.
Yes.
You can kind of go underground.
But now I'm a bigger baby because of it, because I'm not used to needing to be outside for too long.
The pedway, a lot of people are not familiar with it. It's miles long, it feels. It's underneath so many buildings. It connects a lot of downtown. Did you find that everyone was in it on Tuesday and Monday?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I saw a guy in shorts today, because this is how hardy we are in Chicago. Couple of signs of the season, guys. This is interesting. The Chris Kindle Market, it opens today at Daly Plaza. That is so much fun.
Oh my gosh. One of the best Chicago holiday traditions ever.
You know, there's the hot cocoa. There's that wine. They put all those, the mulled wine. They put all the little the spices. I love that. I love all the whole thing about it.
Is it Dinkles or Dinkelman's?
That might be it.
Dinkles? I think it's Dinkles. They make the best brownies ever. That is at Chris Kindle Market, usually.
I just look forward to it every year. And, you know, it's one of those things that I bet this weekend being above freezing as highs, that'll be pretty busy. People
yeah, it's
going to
be beautiful.
Good weekend for
36
it.
Degrees.
That sounds so warm.
Yes.
It sounds so warm. It sounds like get out and enjoy this beautiful city and our area and everything we have to offer. The other thing, too, ice rink in Millennium Park, that is open. And the Maggie Daly Ice Ribbon, both of those are open today. Actually,
so much
starting
fun.
At 11 o'clock, so they're already open. Get out there tonight if you want. It's free. You got to pay for skates, but that's something to do too. And 30 some degree weather, that's when you want to do it, you know? You don't wait until the freezing cold, because then you don't stay out as long. What else is going on? We've got so those are open. Okay, so the tree lighting, that's not till next Friday. And the Magmile Lights Fest, that's a huge, of course, but that's next Saturday, November 23rd, when you see the Mickey and the Minnie and the parades down Michigan Avenue. I love that every year too. For some reason lately, that's always been bad weather days. They haven't really caught the break on that, but it still doesn't matter. Crowded, crowded, crowded. It's so much fun.
So another cool holiday thing, Christmas Around the World and Holidays of Light at Museum of Science and Industry. So you kind of explore holiday traditions from around the world and you can kind of create your own at the same time. It's always cool.
So they do a special thing?
Yeah, so it's like a big layout of different holiday traditions. So you'll have, you know, the standard Christmas tree, but kind of just a look back in history of how different people celebrate.
Interesting. All right. Well, we're going to get to some travel tips coming up in a couple minutes here. Peter Greenberg from CBS, he's a travel editor at CBS, talks about why procrastinators, that you might be in a good situation this holiday travel season. Just the way they work it out, they ran the numbers, they looked at the data from the last few years, and they tried to see when you bought your ticket and how much you saved. And it turns out we're entering that window right now that if you haven't bought your ticket yet, you may be in luck. Do we have a minute here, though? I'll first just to talk about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
All right. Did you hear about this, guys? Taylor Swift. She's in the battle of her life, she says, taking to social media about this whole situation with her the people who own her music. Some it goes back to an agreement she signed like when she was 15 years old. She's about to be honored by the American Music Awards, the Artist of the Decade Award. I mean, such an honor for her. She wanted to perform all of her her songs over the years and how she's evolved as a performer, but is in this major battle with the folks that own her music.
See, that's just not fair.
Netflix also creating a documentary about her, she said on social media. I didn't want to tell you this way, but she's enlisting her entire fandom to try to go after the folks who own a lot of her older music. They're pushing back saying, you know, hey, Taylor, we just want to sit down with you. You just want to talk to us. And it's just you're not being fair yourself. But she seems really concerned about this, that she doesn't believe, at least according to what she's saying, that she'd be able to perform her music from years ago.
Just because they own it. That's
right.
Interesting.
They said it would constitute a re-recording of some of those songs. And so she's not allowed to do it until the contract expires next year. And this is kind of getting ugly, too. But I can only imagine with all of her fans. I mean, I don't know how many followers she has. 20 million, something like that. Can you imagine all of her fans?
Oh, my gosh.
They're reacting?
Yeah.
Isn't she known to be one of the more kind performers, too? That's the other thing. Like, she seems to be one of those people who she surprises her fans when they're in the hospital or does something nice for them, or she's donated money to some others who were in trouble legally and things like that. She's known to be, like, a really good person.
Yeah, very down to earth and kind.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's something to be worried about this weekend. Free Taylor. We hope it works out for her and she gets to perform her songs. We're going to be right back with the travel expert here. Anna DeVlantis in for John Williams on this Friday afternoon. Anna DeVlantis in for John Williams this Friday afternoon. Thanks for making us part of your afternoon. This holiday season, let Kaplan Law Firm worry about your student loans so you can focus on shopping and gifts, not hefty student loan payments. Ray Kaplan, she and her team are experts in federal loan law. They can help you save thousands of dollars on student loan debt. Whether you're in the public sector or not, Kaplan Law Firm can help reduce your monthly student loan payments. Give Ray Kaplan a call, 312-294-8989, or visit financialrelief.com and spend your holidays worrying about presents, not payments. Okay, our guest right now is Peter Greenberg. He's the CBS travel editor. He is going to tell us about procrastinators, how you might be winning this holiday season. Answer your travel questions if you have them, 312-981-7200. Let us know. He knows about these things. And he right now, Peter, is because he has this great gig where he's this travel expert. I believe you're on a luxury yacht or some kind of sailing ship somewhere. Is that right, Peter?
Well, I am on the water. I'm actually on board the Norwegian Joy. We're sailing between Panama and Guatemala on a couple of television pieces that I'm actually shooting here, and then getting off in Guatemala tomorrow and flying back.
Have you been to Guatemala before? Is that a place you recommend to us to visit?
Many times. Great history there. And now it's very, very accessible to get to. A lot of different air services that are going there that weren't going before into Guatemala City. And within about a two-hour drive or maybe even a 40-minute flight of certain places in the city, you're seeing all the great history and civilization come back to life. So it's well worth it.
That is cool to know. You know, I want to get to this story about procrastinators and how it might pay to delay your planning your holiday travel. Because I think that's, I saw that and I broke down and bought my ticket anyway early because there are too many of us traveling and I know it limits some of your options. But first, I also want to ask you about the Bahamas because we know they got brutally hit in September and a terrible storm wiped out a lot of properties there, a lot of the area. And I was wondering, I saw a headline about that, that you can still, there are still places worth traveling in the Bahamas and things are open for business. In fact, I got some sort of an email alert about a place I had been to in the past.
Well, let me put it in some geographical perspective. The Bahamas, there are a few hundred islands,
right,
and only about three of them got really badly hit. And as a result, if you want to go to Nassau, you want to go to a number of other islands, they're fine. And when you have a country like that, whose economy is dependent entirely on travel and tourism, the best way you can support them is to go when otherwise uneducated, unevolved folks think you can't.
Right.
And the answer is you can. You know, we tend to paint with a very broad brush, and the fact is the Bahamas is definitely open for business, not necessarily in Marsh Island, not necessarily in Abaco, but if you go to the resorts in Nassau and to some of the other out islands, you'll be just fine.
So there might be some kind of sort of deals to be found there even?
Very much so. There are deals to be found throughout the Caribbean right now because, as I said, we paint with a broad brush, and people think if there's an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico that Fort Lauderdale is affected. No, it's not. And the same thing applies to the Caribbean. So you got to do your homework, and you will be okay. By the way, my philosophy has always been, and it may sound politically insensitive, but it's not. It's pragmatic. That any time there's a civil disturbance, a political uprising, a natural disaster, a war, the best time to go is immediately thereafter, because that's when they need you the most, that's when they're happiest to see you, that's when you get to experience a place without crowds, lines, or bad service, and you're doing your best to help them recover.
Where would you suggest right now? Are there any other places that you're seeing great deals to if people are trying to plan some sort of a getaway, maybe even post-holidays?
Sure. I mean, you follow the power right now of the U.S. dollar. Argentina, South Africa, Thailand, the euro, for example, and the British pound because of confusion and worries over Brexit. They're all depressed against the U.S. dollar. And your buying power is phenomenal. Remember, it's not about the hotel rate or the airline ticket. It's basic goods and services that the locals have to pay, and they can't really adjust that for their problems with their currency. So right now, the U.S. dollar has 7 times the buying power it had just 8 months ago in Argentina. Time to go do your Christmas shopping right now. The South African rand is about 14 to the U.S. dollar. It's never been a more beneficial exchange rate for us. So, yeah, now's the time to do it. And it's, in many cases, because of the power of the U.S. dollar and because of concerns over Brexit and because of foreigners' concerns about the Trump administration's immigration policies, the amount of outbound travel to the United States is down, which means that a lot of tickets that would be already filled by foreign visitors are now represented by empty seats. So airfares alone are on sale overseas, and in many cases, maybe less than trying to cross the United States.
Peter, we have a listener asking Hong Kong. Is that a place you would recommend to go to? Is it much cheaper? Because that can be a pricey ticket typically at other times, but with all the protests that we've seen on television, is it wise to go there? Is it cheaper to go there?
Well, again, we've got to put this in some real perspective. The actual geographic location of the protest is about 6 square blocks of Hong Kong, period. At one point, they were protesting at the airport, not any longer. A number of airlines have cut their service there because no seats were being filled. What a great time to go. Seriously, you just have to do your homework. The real key about travel, whether you're going to Hong Kong or Houston, is not knowing where to go, but knowing where not to go. And just do a little basic microgeography, and you'll be just fine.
Another listener asks, is Tuesday really the cheapest day to buy a plane ticket? I've seen those stories in the past, kind of read them about how Tuesday night at some hour is the best time to get online and buy your ticket. Does it really matter? Is that Tuesday rule true?
Well, those stories were written by me, and they were true, but now it's changed. The best time to buy a ticket is on Sundays because everything's pegged to business travelers, and business travelers don't make reservations on Sundays. They make them Monday through Friday. So do your homework. You can do a great comparison shopping, but the one advice I'd give you that nobody else will is almost everybody listening to the show is going to go online to make their reservation. And I'm telling you, that may not be your best friend.
What is?
Only about 52% of available inventory is online. It's being held back by the travel providers. What you're seeing is only one of what they want to show you. It's time to go back to the future and have a conversation. Look at the internet as a great research tool, then pick up the phone and call the airline, the hotel, the cruise line, whatever, and have a conversation, because what they're looking at on their screen is definitely not what you're seeing on your screen.
Oh, that's a pro tip. That's very helpful. Now let's get to this headline we were talking about. It might pay to delay planning your holiday travel. This was based on a AAA analysis. They looked at several years, I think it was 3 years of domestic flights, Thanksgiving and Christmas, around those times, the holidays that are so well traveled and so many people have to go places and also want to go to see their family. They say by the calculations they looked at that it did pay to procrastinate, specifically if they waited until 7 to 13 days before Thanksgiving, you'd pay a lot less, maybe up to $100 less for tickets. In their analysis, we're kind of entering that window now. It's 13 days until Thanksgiving. Is this something you're seeing? And you, I mean, this is backed up by data, Peter. What would you be your comment on what you're hearing?
It's backed up by flawed data. I couldn't disagree more.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. It's the basic law of supply and demand. In fact, the same people who gave you that data would also tell you that over 44 million people are going to be traveling by car over the holidays, and over 4.5 million people by air, which represents a big increase over last year, because gas prices haven't skyrocketed and airfares are down. However, having said that, for every day you wait to purchase a ticket for Thanksgiving or Christmas, that airfare will go up on average $10 a day. So do the math. Now, there may be one day in there that's a sweet spot, like Thanksgiving Day itself, if you get a 7 o'clock in the morning flight, which, by the way, I'd recommend. But in general, no, you don't win by procrastination unless there's some outside force of a natural disaster or a weather issue that's going to get in the way. So there you have it from me.
That is amazing, because I saw that and actually was upset because I booked my ticket so far in advance, because I assume that even if you wait to the last second, you don't have as much flexibility. Flights do sell out around the holidays, right? Isn't that the time when it's tougher to get seats?
Well, it's tougher to get seats around Thanksgiving. That's the biggest travel time of the year, that Tuesday and Wednesday before Thanksgiving. However, a different animal, because it's a longer holiday period. People can stagger their departures and you can actually get some better deals. But still, the same principle I gave you applies. Every day you wait, those fares will go up on average $10.
Peter Greenberg, CBS travel editor, thanks for straightening us up on a lot of those issues there. That helps a lot. We appreciate it. And buy your tickets, your airline ticket, on a Sunday night. Thank you so much, Peter. It's Anna DeVellantis in for John Williams this Friday. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk politics here, get you up to date on everything you need to know, from the impeachment inquiry hearings, the second day of that, to everything going on locally and in Springfield. The major surprise announcement yesterday that John Cullerton, the Senate president, would step down, what that means, what we can glean from things going on there, and also the budgetary issues that they were hoping to pass, including the casino, the real estate transfer tax. Doesn't seem like Mayor Lightfoot's getting the love she had hoped to get in order to plug the holes in her budget. Here with us, Kristen McQuarrie from Chicago Tribune Editorial Board. Thank you for being with us, Kristen.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Eric Adelstein of AL
Media.
AL Media. Thank you both. All right, today we're talking about Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. She's testifying the second day of the impeachment inquiry. And I think what has made news so far is the president live tweeting during that. Adam Schiff, the chairman of the committee for the intelligence, the House Intelligence Committee, started to read those tweets to get them on the record during the hearing today. You're kind of chuckling, Eric. What are your thoughts about what you saw today? What stands out in your mind?
Well, on Wednesday, he said he had better things to do than to watch the hearings. Apparently, the White House schedule's clear today, and the president doesn't have anything to do other than watch TV and tweet. I don't know that there was a ton more ground broken. She's a very sympathetic witness. Some Republicans were coming to her defense, with the president tweeting at her. Career diplomat, you know, patriot, loyal to this country. And I think just, again, putting a personal face on some of these witnesses rather than just reading closed-door testimony is clear. And, it's not a good day for the president. I would say, I think the key moment or moments will be when we have first-person testimony, people who had talked to Trump. So Sondland, I believe, is supposed to testify next week. We don't know when Bolton will testify, although there's rumors that he gave a private speech last week just eviscerating the president. So, you know, I think that the sort of star witnesses are yet to appear.
That's been the concern from Republicans. You've heard it since day one of these impeachment inquiry hearings, Kristen, that we're hearing from third-hand information. We're not getting it from the source, but then the sources are not exactly available to testify. What's your read on what you've heard?
Well, I mean, today, just for your listeners who haven't been in front of a television, they're mostly quizzing the former ambassador about, I wouldn't say her feelings, but the fact that she felt like she was thrown under the bus, that the president and Rudy Giuliani went after her reputation. She understands that as an ambassador, she serves at the will of the president. She could be removed at any time. But she's kind of, Eric was saying earlier, a very halting witness. And apparently during closed door testimony, she got emotional when she talked about how she first read the transcript and learned what the president said about her. And so today just feels a little bit like the Democrats are trying to get her to show that same emotion to the cameras. It feels a little more dog and pony show, I would say, today, perhaps, than in previous days. But she's certainly a credible, you know, comes across as a credible witness.
She did get close to tears today. It did feel that, you know, she got a little bit emotional there. And I believe she used the word threatened. She felt threatened by the president after, you know, he told her that she'd go through some things, is the way she put it.
Yeah, I mean, in that transcript, he does say she's going to go through some things, or she's going to face some things. And she says that she felt that that was, you know, clear intimidation. And then this morning, while she was testifying, Trump was tweeting about her testimony. So then Adam Schiff read the tweet to her. It's just a strange
mess.
It does seem
like upside down. We're in the upside down.
Yes, where you have them all, they're communicating through Twitter during an impeachment inquiry.
Yeah.
It was very awkward.
Well, I guess that's where we sort of bottom line this, and I want to move on to talk locally too, but at the end of the day, you've got, this is completely split along party lines, the idea to move forward with an inquiry, the idea to impeach. You have two Democrats, I think, that moved over, right? But they were heavily Trump districts, so that's where you're at. The idea is, do you get more Republicans to come over with the testimony, with the evidence you put forward, or not? And if you don't you need the support of the public in order to make this go anywhere? Well, or is there another motive? Or you see something else?
Well, I don't think there's motive as much as constitutional duty. I mean, I think Pelosi and the Democrats in the House had really no choice but to hold these hearings. I mean, Trump forced their hand. If we allow this kind of behavior, again, whatever the outcome is, to go uninvestigated, to go unlooked at, Congress is sort of ceding its power. It's saying the president can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and that's not right. And I don't know that we totally know where it will end. You know, if you look back at the Nixon impeachment stuff, you know, it was very polarized at that time. Republicans were not supporting. But when we get to the end of the process and we see after everyone's testified where it'll be, yes, we are in a very polarized moment. But I don't think that, you know, we can necessarily predict what'll happen.
Kristen, you have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I would agree. I just, coming from Illinois, where we're very familiar with the whole idea of quid pro quos, and they don't have to be explicit. We've seen that with two governors gone to jail. You hear people, I'm more conservative leaning, you hear a lot of conservatives complain about unspoken quid pro quos from our legislative leaders, etc. So how can we just turn the other cheek and look away and give an excuse to Trump when he says on the transcript, I need you to do me a favor? And we learn now that there had been sort of this movement for months to try to get more investigation into the Bidens, which I support. I think what the Bidens did was very suspect, but you can't overlap the two. You can't overlap your official duty as president with your campaign ambitions.
So it's funny you mentioned quid pro quo, because I think here in Illinois and in Chicago, we understand this, right? We had a tape with a former governor saying, I have this thing and it's effing golden and I'm not giving it up for nothing. I think that's a nice lesson on what quid pro quo actually means, right? We understand it. But it's sort of, it's interesting because the Washington Observers now, when you read some of the tea leaves here, they say the reason they're not talking quid pro quo now is because Americans as a whole don't necessarily grasp that context and understand why that's so wrong. So it's moved on to bribery. And today, the other thing that broke through with this new testimony is intimidation of a witness, is what you heard from the Democrats after this former ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, spoke earlier today. That was what you came out with. You saw Nancy Pelosi come out to the podium, the microphones, after her earlier testimony. That's what they said.
Well, I think Kristen's right. Illinoisans have a little more sophisticated understanding of Latin when it comes to quid pro quo than I think the rest of the nation.
A couple Latin terms we know.
Yeah, unfortunately, because of corrupt governors. But
yeah.
Look, the fact is it is bribery, the allegations at least. And it is witness intimidation. And when you look at what the Constitution says about impeachment, when you look at the history of impeachment, it is about high crimes and misdemeanors. It is specifically related to the concern of foreign governments intervening in our politics. And, you know, if this case doesn't rise to the level of having hearings on impeachment, I'm not sure anything ever will. So I think to talk about bribery, to talk about witness intimidation is totally appropriate. And I think we'll see where it goes.
Eric, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but I will for a second here. 708. Hey, Eric, what about investigating the Bidens and their collusion? I know,
sure.
Kristen, you addressed this. Biden used his position as vice president. They talked about that whole issue. I think that does still ring true to some people. They wonder why that's not okay to sort of look into that, or is it not? Is it already been looked into to our satisfaction?
Yeah.
And we're done with it.
It's fair. Here's the hypocrisy. We have a president who says, I was looking into corruption. He's never asked another head of state to look into corruption in their country. He's cut anti-corruption funds in the State Department and throughout the government. He's never made any record on the record comments asking a country to investigate it. The only time he did it when it was related to a potential political opponent. So his intent to say that I was just wanting to look into corruption really falls short.
Kristen, you're just saying it should be separate, but there should be something.
Well, no, I mean, Joe Biden is running for president, so I think it's the duty of the media to get to the bottom of what is a lot. I mean, if you read Peter Schweitzer's book, he has an entire book on how Hunter Biden and John Kerry's son benefited from the relationships of their fathers, and no one really disputes the facts in this book. So it's out there. It's the duty of the media to investigate it. But again, you can't overlap your role as president and try to leverage that in order to further your campaign interests. That's what Blagojevich did here. You can horse trade. You can say, I'll vote for your bill if you vote for mine. You can't personally profit from your governmental role. And that's the allegation with Trump, that he was overlapping and was going to somehow benefit through his campaign by pushing Ukrainian officials to investigate.
It does seem as if Biden is not doing as well in the polls as he was doing earlier, and it seems that others are rising. Deval Patrick, just a minute here before we break and talk local issues. Getting into the race, he's South Sider from Chicago, talks about being raised in poverty, growing to be a governor of Massachusetts, a successful career in finance, kind of connected to a lot of big banks. He's got that sort of piece of him, but amazing success story, him getting in. We've had several people call into WGN who are analysts of this kind of thing, who know him and know Barack Obama, and say that Barack Obama might have actually nudged him into the race, not happy with what he's seeing with the other candidates.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody nudges anybody into running for president. I mean, I think it has to be, you have to have that fire in the belly, as they say. Look, Patrick has the potential to be a real wild card in this race. I mean, it is late. It's not a lot of precedent for getting in this late. Given that he's from Massachusetts, he could do well in New Hampshire. He could do well in South Carolina. It's not good news for the Biden campaign. What I think it speaks to mostly is how volatile this Democratic field is right now. We don't know who the nominee is going to be.
Eric, Kristen, we're going to keep talking politics with us, and we're going to switch gears here and talk about John Cullerton, his sudden announcement that he's going to be stepping aside in January as the Senate president. Everybody's stunned by this one. The governor walking out after the veto session, like, I had no idea. Nobody had any idea. Is there anything more to read into this? We're going to find out coming up here with more here on WGN Radio. Our guests are Eric Adelstein and Kristen McQuarrie. We're talking politics right now, and a real surprise in Illinois politics. Kristen, I saw your tweet first yesterday afternoon. I think it was broke by Capital Facts. I'm not sure, but the announcement that the Senate President John Cullerton was stepping aside after 40 years in politics, and a big announcement, right? This is a big move.
I mean, this is a big announcement. He's not like a equivalent to a Mike Madigan in Springfield. He's only been Senate president, I think, since 2009, but he's been down there for 40 years. He's very much part of the dynamic of Springfield. It comes at a curious time. Feds are everywhere in state government and in several local governments. There's no connection that we know of in terms of his timing, but there are three members of the Democratic caucus, senators, who have been touched by this investigation, one facing indictment. But the Senate president says this is a promise he made to his wife. And by stepping down early, he gets to help choose his replacement and make sure that whoever takes his Senate seat is someone sort of approved by him.
My favorite headline today was actually from the Chicago Tribune, your paper, Springfield after Cullerton. Will the next Illinois Senate president be a change agent? That's a very hopeful headline. We're going to have
it was. Change. That was the editorial that I helped write, and it's very rhetorical. No,
yeah,
right?
You want to have hope, right? But I read that and I sort of chuckled and thought, who will be the next Senate president?
Well, you know, there's an old line about Washington that every senator looks in the mirror and sees a president. I think you could look at the caucus, the Illinois Senate Democratic Caucus, and they all look in the mirror and see a Senate president. So. I don't think there's any front runner for this. I think there's a half a dozen that have been named. I think there could be three or four others. I think it's going to be a very open competition. And look, let's be clear. When you elect these kind of leaders, it's not a policy or an ideological fight. It's pure horse trading. You want to talk about pure politics of, you know, the highest sort to win one of those caucuses and then to be able to hold it together. Because you think about it, you're now holding it together against people who wanted the job that you wanted. It's very tough, and it's going to be kind of anybody who enjoys parlor politics should pop the popcorn and pay attention to this one, because it's going to be fun.
I think when the headline first crossed that someone of this importance in state government was deciding to step aside, with the Fed swarming in City Hall and Springfield and all over the place, and it seems like there are so many announcements, and then, as you pointed out, three Senate Democrats are under federal scrutiny for corruption charges. A lot of people wanted to connect dots on this, but I haven't heard a single person actually connect any dots, and it seems as if this is truly what he says it is.
You know, we're so used to being cynical in this state for good reason. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes things are what they appear to be. There aren't hidden motives. And a guy who's been there 40 years, who's 70 years old, who, you know, maybe wants to do a few other things with the rest of his life, I take him at his word. And we don't have any sense that or any reason or any information that would suggest it's anything else. And I do think, again, given our cynicism in Illinois, we should also applaud somebody for 40 years of public service. Whether we agree with them, like them, disagree, you know, it's a hard job, and he did it for a long time.
Yeah, and it seems as if he did develop a reputation for reaching across the aisle and playing politics in a very different way than House Speaker Mike Madigan. He was much more, would you say, a consensus builder, Kristen? Is that fair, or how would you say that?
I mean, he's had the luxury of a supermajority since 2012. So to Eric's point about this being really a power broker position, it is. You have to raise money. You have to hang on to that supermajority. But what we argue in the editorial today is that because they have a supermajority, the next person could actually try to push a policy agenda, make government more open, start the budget process in January instead of May, push for what voters want, like term limits. I know these are, you can roll your eyes, I'm rolling mine too. It's it's unlikely that would be...
You're rolling your eyes, you wrote it.
I know, but we
how many people write these, Kristen? How many people get together on this?
This was myself and my editor as I was walking home from the train yesterday and got a text from someone in the caucus meeting, and I had a few swear words. Are you kidding? Are you serious? Like, this is big news if he's stepping down. So yes, we did write. I mean, that's our job as a newspaper editorial board, to try to push people to do the right thing,
Sure. Not
to just accept that, oh, there's a position opening up and let's just plug some other status quo politician in there. So that's why we have a little bit more of a hopeful tone. And I do think a couple years ago, he was working with the Republican leader, Christine Rodonio, trying to break the gridlock with Rauner and work on a compromise. And we on the editorial page tried to get them to reach some sort of a compromise. And had he, I wouldn't have been surprised then if he would have stepped aside. Because there have been kind of rumors that he's been tired and wanting to sort of get out from underneath this responsibility.
He humbly brags, he says, about working with Republicans to pass two capital bills, marriage equality, abolishing the death penalty and pension, school funding, and immigration reform. Some of the accomplishments cited about him and spoken highly of by a number of people in Springfield, too. We have a caller here, Diane, who has a question for either of you. Diane, tell us what you got. What do you want to ask?
Hi, I am from Villa Park, and something that I haven't heard any reporter say, John Cullerton is the uncle of Tom Cullerton in Villa Park, who just in August was indicted on 40 charges of embezzlement. Now, don't tell me John didn't know what Tom was doing. We're not buying that here in Villa Park. And now all of a sudden he's stepping down amidst all this other stuff. I think this is putting a little heat on him, too. And none of the reporters are talking about this.
I don't think there's enough evidence there to connect anything. I think he's a distant cousin.
Not yet.
It's maybe true, but at this point, I don't think it's fair to connect dots when we don't know anything. Have you heard anything at all? Because everything I've read is that those are totally separate charges.
Well, he is a distant cousin. Now he gets a lot of help at election time from the PAC that the Senate president runs. But having read the indictment of Cullerton and having read the indictment of the Teamsters official who supposedly he was working with and he was informing the feds about this, he was taking money on the side for like a ghost payrolling job. I don't know. There's nothing in the indictment that indicates John Cullerton was aware of any of that was going on. And again, you have to remember this is an indictment. It is a charge. We believe people to be innocent until proven guilty. And so even in Tom Cullerton's case, he has his day in court coming up, and we'll find out.
We'll find out more. Okay, Diane, I hope that answers the question for now. I don't know if it changes your mind, but it's certainly that's where things stand at the moment. Let's talk about the casino bill, okay, because that was something that I know the mayor and the governor had hoped would get done in this veto session. Not only had they hoped it would get done in this veto session, they're already counting on the money from this casino in Chicago. Let's back up a little bit, remind everybody, initially they came out with a plan that was independently studied and nobody wanted to bid on the Chicago casino because the taxes were deemed too onerous to build a casino and take the risk of single-digit profits and that they didn't want to come forward. So they were supposed to help them out a little bit, knowing that it will benefit not just the state, not just the city, but also the state. Why did that not go through? What have you guys heard?
Go ahead, Eric. So I'm really cynical to think that independent study showing that a Chicago casino wasn't going to be profitable, I really raise some questions about that. I know no one else does, but that just seems to me sort of preposterous to think that this largest casino, you know, 4,000 gaming positions was not going to be of interest to someone in the gaming industry. But to your question, I think Lori Lightfoot, as the new mayor, maybe a little naive as to how Springfield works, 177 lawmakers, each one with an ego that has to be stroked, and you have to talk to them and call them. And you saw the Republican, one of the Republican House members was sort of insulted that she didn't reach out to him because he's a point person on gaming. If you want to redo this tax structure, you have to invest a little more time in negotiating that. They say they ran out of time. They have 6 days of veto session and they couldn't get around to it. I don't really buy that. I think that this was their way to sort of teach the new mayor a lesson about how Springfield works and let them kind of throw their weight around a little bit.
Trying to avoid property taxes is ultimately what you want to do. Eric, what do you think about the budget situation we're in? You think we're going to get out of this?
Well, you know, you got it is the golden goose. Not that the casino will solve all the problems, but right. Like you said, the governor and the mayor are counting on it. I can't imagine this is going to go very long. I mean, I know we don't come back till January to work on it, but it's hard to get these bigger things done during veto session for the reason that Kristen said. You can't stroke all those egos. You can't do all the meetings you want to have. And this mayor is dealing with 10 other crises at the same time. So it'll get done under what terms, I don't know, but I cannot imagine that they're going to let this go much further because they need that thing to come online and start generating revenue or these budget problems are just going to get worse.
Yeah, that's the issue. We're sort of relying on it. It's built into the budget. Where else do you go? It feels as if everyone feels taxed enough, right? How do you go farther than you've gone?
Well, the casino, for the budget year that starts January 1st, the casino revenue is not included in Lightfoot's proposal. She was counting on this real estate transfer tax.
Right,
for
which also didn't
that
pass.
That was her second strike, too. She didn't get the tax either. But in the spring session, as Eric is saying, I'm sure they will. You know, this also happens when you pass a casino bill that has 700 pages. No one really had a chance to read it or study it. They jammed it through in May, and now they're having to go back and sort of fix what the problems were.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Eric Edelstein of AL Media, Kristen McCreary, Chicago Tribune editorial board. We appreciate it. Appreciate the politics talk.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
WGN Radio, much more coming up. Stay with us.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Anna DeVlantis in for John today. John's back on Monday. Happy Friday to you.
Lord have mercy.
Mm-hmm. Hope your Friday's going well. We want to talk about an important issue. November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. And we have with us someone very important and someone in this fight to help people with lung cancer. That is Harold Wimmer, National President, CEO of the American Lung Association. Thank you for being with us, Harold.
Hey, thank you for having us back again.
Yeah, it's good to see you again, because this is the month when we talk about it. I know WGN Radio is a big sponsor of the Fight for Air. It's at Presidential Towers every year. The people who are incredibly fit across the WGN studios and beyond, across the entire city of Chicago, show up to run more than 2,000 stairs up and down the Presidential Towers. One of the hardest climbs, I think, there is. One of the harder sort of charity climbs or that kind of, you know, contest you can find in the Chicago area. But a lot of people do it.
Oh, yes. We have over 1,000 participants each year in really helping to support the American Lung Association by climbing the four towers at Presidential Towers.
You do good work over there, and we know you're doing good work on behalf of people here, getting the word out about lung cancer. The one thing you hear so much about is lung illness and problems with breathing in the wake of the vaping situation. We just had the fourth death here in Illinois today. That was been in the news today, so that's a separate issue, typically involving a lot of younger people. What would be the average age of someone getting lung cancer? What are you seeing in terms of the statistics?
Well, what we're seeing is that with our new report that was just released on Wednesday of this week during Lung Cancer Awareness Month, it's our state of lung cancer. And what we're finding is that the national average is that approximately 228,000 Americans are being diagnosed with lung cancer each year. And, you know, that number is starting to decrease, but yet the American Lung Association is really working to help raise awareness about this important issue, because lung cancer is the number one cancer killer of women and men in the United States. And that's a fact that not many people are really familiar with.
I did not know that.
So it's, you know, our one of our key objectives is to help raise awareness about that important fact, and then also to really drive home that with the incidence of lung cancer, which is the five-year survival rate, is low. Here in the U.S., only about 21.7% of individuals who are diagnosed survive more than 5 years, and that's one of the lower survival rates for any form of cancer.
Why is it, Harold, that people are late to diagnose? Is this something that doesn't present itself with symptoms early enough? Do people ignore those symptoms? What are you finding?
I mean, that oftentimes happens, you know, in terms of individuals presenting symptoms. But the fact is, though, is that there are screening mechanisms now available. So individuals can get screened through low-dose CT screening. It's been in the marketplace now for 4 years, yet only a very small percentage of individuals who we classify as being at high risk are actually getting screened. And that's something that, you know, we're working towards, is to make sure that people become aware, if they're at high risk, that they should talk to their doctor about getting screened.
What does screening mean? I've never had it before. Maybe people listening are not familiar with it. Is it a scary thing?
No, it's a very simple procedure. It's a CT scan. It just takes minutes to have this test done. And the best part about this is that if someone is detected with lung cancer at an early stage, it's almost curable. So it's really important that, you know, that we find lung cancer at the earliest of stages, because 80% of lung cancer cases are being diagnosed at a later stage, at stage 3 or stage 4. And when it's detected at that late of a stage, the five-year survival rate is less than 5%. Mm-hmm. So by detecting it at stage 1 or stage 2, the five-year survival rate jumps up 5 times. So it's almost, you know,
tells you how important that screening really is.
Yes, 90%. So the American Lung Association has a new campaign called Save by the Scan. And we're conducting this campaign in conjunction with the Ad Council. And it's really to help drive awareness, to help individuals determine if they're at high risk and if they should be talking to their physician about getting scans. So the American Lung Association is really asking and encourage the public to go to savebythescan.org. It's on our website, and it will there's a quiz that's on the website that can really help you determine if you should be talking to your doctor about getting scanned.
That website, once again, is?
SavedByTheScan.org. Or you can go to lung.org, and you'll also get to that website. So screening is really important, and that's really one of our objectives during Lung Cancer Awareness Month, is to drive that awareness.
My aunt passed away a few years, caller in the 708, from lung cancer. First, they thought it was from smoking early on, because a lot of people fall in that category where they smoked for many years and then stopped. But then they believe it was from asbestos. She was a teacher at a certain high school for many years, and there was a presence of asbestos. So how often do you find that it's smoking related, and how often do you find that people who don't smoke aren't aware that they may have lung cancer?
I mean, that's interesting, because 20% of lung cancer cases that are being diagnosed are from individuals who've never smoked. So there are other risk factors. Smoking definitely is the number one risk factor, but there are additional risk factors such as air pollution, radon, also genetics play a factor in this. So, it's really important for us to be aware about lung cancer.
So many people would not even know, because it doesn't have to necessarily do with smoking, and because of that, it may not even be on your radar, but it's worth getting to that savedbythescan.org. Answer some simple questions. Find out if you might be a candidate for screening.
Yes. I mean, that is so important. And also in our effort to help raise awareness, research is also critical. So the American Lung Association raises important funds, like from our Fight for Air stair climb,
right,
to help support lung cancer research. We also advocate for more funding from NIH for lung cancer research, because just alone in the last 4 years, there's been 25 new drug treatments that have come onto the market. And these really bring hope to individuals who've been who've been found to have lung cancer.
I bet it does. I bet it does. SavedByTheScan.org is the place to go. Harold Wimmer, National President and CEO of the American Lung Association, thank you so much for your time. Get to that site, see if you qualify, or you would be a good candidate to get a screening. Might save your life.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harold. Appreciate it. All right. We're talking about those super awkward conversations around the holidays, specifically with relationships. Do you kind of like dread going to see your family at the holidays, because they're all going to ask you all those personal relationship questions? Who are you dating?
Yeah, especially now that my sister's married. Uh-oh. I'm
that's, next. That's it. That's it. And then she's going to get the, when are you having kids?
Yep. It's a cycle, right?
Right. Do you dread those questions, Laura?
Oh, absolutely.
I know. I got married in my late 30s, and I feel like I just dreaded the holiday time, because those questions, and then you were always flawed if you didn't have somebody, so everybody wanted to set you up. I have the perfect person for you. Okay,
Gosh, yeah. I can't even explain to you. Every time I see them, there's someone new. Oh, you have to meet so-and-so.
Yeah. We've got to talk about this and a number of other issues. We've got Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, here with us, and Heidi Stevens from the Tribune columnist. You know her, you love her, and she's a great tweeter, too, so you got to follow her. What's your Twitter handle,
Heidi? At Heidi Stevens 13. Apparently there's 12 other Heidi Stevens.
12 others? Girl, you had to get going. You should have gotten on that
beat
sooner.
Beat me to Twitter. I was like ducking and waiting for Twitter to like fly over my head as like this passing fad. And I really called that one wrong.
You adopted that, yeah.
I went ahead and got on there. 12 Heidi Stevens is too late. But anyway, yeah. At Heidi Stevens 13.
Do you guys dread anything at the holidays? Or are you question askers? Do you ask the questions?
Oh, God. I am the question. I'm super nosy, mm-hmm. Which is probably just a journalist thing, but I hope I also have the sense that if someone feels uncomfortable, I don't press on. But I do. I kind of go there with the questions.
Like, who do you noodle? Is it your kids? Because your kids are grown, right?
Yes.
John?
Yeah. My son is grown, but I have brothers-in-law. I have a lot of family where if they're suffering from something difficult, I want all about that. I want to do therapy 24/7.
I will say, I interviewed this therapist once about, it was about talking, to people at the holidays, and he said, never unstitch something that you can't sew up by the end of the meal, which I kind of liked that visual. Right? Like, don't decide, pass the gravy. And Grandma, I've been meaning to bring this up for the past 12 Thanksgivings, and I'm bringing it up this time. Like, if you can't sew that thing up by the end of the meal, that's not the time. I kind of like liked that.
It's real good. And that's usually the markings of a good therapy session. That, you know, if you can, if the person walks out feeling better than they walked in, you did all right.
Make some sort of breakthrough, some sort of connection about maybe even recognizing where you are. But relationships in general, that's fair game, isn't it, at the holidays to say, hey, who are you dating now? Or should you just avoid it? I mean, it's not always awkward, is it?
I think it's going to happen no matter what, regardless of whether it's fair game. And I think it is. I think people want to know with the, actually, people of any age in their lives, if they're single, they're going to ask, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to ask, like, are you seeing anybody now? What's going on? You know, like, there's always that, I wish I were a grandparent kind of thing, or, you know, I want you to be with somebody. I don't want you to be alone. So I think family members are always going to be involved in that.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. If you've ever been asked or asked yourself, asked somebody else in your family an awkward question that wasn't well received, let us know what it is, because it's this time of year. We just try to think of it being mindful of others. And or if you're Heidi, you just go ahead and ask anyway.
Well,
doesn't matter.
I was going to say, I think it's a little bit depends on the family dynamics, right? Like, I think you know if your family is sort of judgy and like looking to assign you value or worth based on whether you're coupled or not. Or like, do you have a pretty open-minded, fun family who's like, no way, wait, what happened with Roger? Like the guy from last year? And they're not going to like decide that you're a failure when you tell the story. They just kind of want to know. So like, I do think, you know, if you're in a family or a friend situation where like people are generally pretty loving and kind about stuff and just want to hear your stories, that's different than like, you know, here we are sitting around a table of people who don't think very highly of you. You know, give us a reason to think a little better of you. Do you at least have a boyfriend?
Right.
You know, like, have you found a date lately at least?
It's
like, that's
context.
A different feeling, right? It is the context, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. It goes to, like, job situation, too. If you're job hunting or if you're not in a forever job at that moment and everybody starts drilling you about, you know, how's work going? Okay, do you love... I mean, it just sometimes these things, they can get awkward.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yep.
And what do you do with it? We have to talk about some other things here too, guys, because there is such an interesting article about being real online, on social media, like putting it out there. You see so many times celebrities get a lot of attention and a lot of love, actually, when they come out and say something very personal about themselves. You know, they say, I'm dealing with mental illness, or I have, I have this sickness or this disease, or I have, I'm going through a lot right now. And they seem that is sharing that with their community of followers works out positively. In fact, there's some research here that shows they actually get more likes and more followers when this happens, and perhaps more publicity. But does it work that way for kids? And what do you tell your kids? Because they want to follow maybe the leads of the celebrities, and they maybe... they tell too much about themselves, and there's certainly those areas that you, I don't know, as a parent, you feel like, should you just be telling everybody that? Maybe I know you get a lot of likes or a lot of love for this, but should it be out there?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot that concerns me about this. So I had not heard the word sad fishing until about a month ago, and I've heard it 100 times since then.
Sad fishing.
Sad fishing.
Well,
this idea of
posting
something out there with the hopes of getting likes or followers or sympathy from the people who are already following you, which... in and of itself might not be the end of the world, but too often I find that the kids I know and work with end up playing de facto therapist for one another and trying to, you know, help each other through something that, you know, it takes us years of grad school and years of practice to actually learn how to do. So that actually concerns me quite a bit. And you can get these trolls saying, you know, like, oh, you think your life is so bad? Well, and then they'll double down with their own sorry story. And this can devolve into something really, really negative really quickly.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this once on our podcast, and I remember interviewing, I think it was Devorah Heitner, who's written a really good book about, you know, smart mentoring of kids online rather than sort of trying to police everything. And she talked about how important it is to help kids understand that, like, this stuff, you know, does stick around forever, too. So there might be a point in their lives when they want a fresh start. Maybe they go to college, or maybe they're entering the job market, or they're trying to find an internship, and they don't necessarily want their history of anxiety or depression or any number of things that they're dealing with. They don't necessarily want that following them around. But, like, once you put it out there, it's out there forever. So I think it can be hard to help kids look, you know, down the road, right?
Very.
Especially if they're in a dark place.
Yep.
They're not
yep.
really looking past right this very moment.
And that's really hard to wrap your brain around when you're 14 years old and you're having a hard time and you want that sympathy.
Yeah.
For sure.
We're going to keep this conversation going, guys. We want to just take a break here. Keep your... let us know what you think about the awkward relationships, and if you have any comments about what we're talking about here, if you relate to any of this, 312-981-7200. We're back with more here. Oh, this is an interesting comment before we break. As someone that's dealing quietly with infertility, it is never okay to ask a woman, married or single, when they're going to have a baby. Mm. It's an interesting point, perspective there. Thanks for sharing. We'll be right back with much more. Anna DeVlantis in for John Williams this Friday. Thank you for making us part of your afternoon. We were talking about drama around the holidays, the kinds of awkward questions that people tend to ask, and you receive them and you don't really love it. And thank you for your texts and on all of that. We had a number of people say that, yeah, you always do. But then we just got a text here saying, I lost my text here, but basically was we don't have any drama at the holidays.
Wow.
That is a lucky
Do you have any
family.
Openings at your table?
Can you invite a couple more people
so we
can witness this and see what this looks like?
Make a mean pumpkin pie?
Right. You see, that's the other thing. What do you bring to a party and who do you bring? If you have a new person in your life, can you just bring the new person? Is that okay?
I mean, if they're game.
I agree. Yeah. And yet I think there has to be some prep. In my experience, like, here's what you're going to run into.
Here's the backstory.
Just be prepared. Yeah. And all you have to say is this, like, some kind of boundary, you know what I mean? And some out
yeah.
with certain conversations.
Run down the different family members,
yeah.
what to expect, kind of a, you know, play card.
Yeah, right. If you're bringing somebody onto your home turf, I do feel like you've got to have a little bit of loyalty to, like, how comfortable they're going to feel. Like, you
For
brought
sure.
them there, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're sort of playing host. You should... you know, give them the tools they need to not be miserable the whole time, right?
Yeah. You bake, you said? Or do you bake?
I do, yeah.
What's a good thing to bring?
Well, I mean, you can't go wrong with a pie.
No, I think dessert is always a winner, especially
Definitely.
A homemade dessert if you do it.
Yeah.
Pick it up. If not, right?
Pick
it up. Let's get back to this other topic, because I think it is fascinating. We were talking before about being real online and how much is too much. And then I want to get to some sound that crossed on CNN today. I think it's a very interesting issue that Kellyanne Conway was asked about something very personal as sort of an aside in an interview about something else. And I want to get your thoughts on that. But this whole being real online, what you advise kids or even if you're a grown adult, I think you realize that when you make an admission of some sort, you get a lot of attention for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do. And then how much of that is telling too much? You know, how much is, you know, do you share everything about your medical history? Do you put that out there? Are there other problems with that? It just seems, you know, there are parameters that you need to respect.
I feel like it would be a good conversation to have with a kid or a grown up to say, like, I wonder if we could find a support group online or, you know, even a Facebook group that specializes in just this specific topic and then go there with the conversations, because then, you know, there's the attention part of it that maybe you're seeking, but then you might actually get some help and commiseration in a way that's helpful too, right?
Definitely.
And it's maybe a little more private.
Well, and in fact, there are groups on Snapchat that put together by teenagers, where if you are feeling depressed, if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling hopeless, come to this group. You're going to get support, and it is pretty overwhelming. Like, I've been invited to one of these,
really?
And the support is really impressive and lovely and overwhelming 98% of the time. And every once in a while, there's like this little troll moment, but it feels negligible relative
and
to all
that,
the support.
Where do you find that again?
So that's on Snapchat.
I
think it's literally like, you know, if you're having a hard time.
Okay.
Yeah.
The more the merrier, our texter wrote back. So, Heidi, you're invited.
Oh,
I'd like
yes.
to head out to a different holiday party, see how other people do it with the drama free holiday.
Tweet me the address.
That's available. So, thank you for the invite. Let's get to this, though. I don't think you see this interaction between Wolf Blitzer on CNN and Kellyanne Conway, the advisor to the president. She is married. She's one of these famous Washington marriages where George Conway is on MSNBC on the first day of the impeachment inquiry hearings, just kind of railing the president left and right.
Flames
get him out
on
of
Twitter
I mean,
all the time.
Crazy,
yeah.
right? He writes op-ed pieces.
Right.
He just calls for him to get out of office. And then his wife is the one partially responsible for bringing him into office, famous pollster and a very successful woman in her own right, but she is a big supporter of the president's and is a spokeswoman for the president. She was being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer on Wednesday, I believe. Wednesday, he was talking with her and kind of asking about, you know, what was happening with the first day of impeachment inquiry, and everything seemed to be going as you would normally expect these interviews to go until he asked her this.
Final question, a sensitive question, and it's a political question. It's a substantive question. I don't want to talk about your marriage. I know that there are issues there. Your husband, George Conway, he's a lawyer.
Did you just say?
Your husband, George Conway.
Did you just say there are issues there? You don't want to talk about marriage?
I don't want to talk about... No, I don't want to talk...
Why did you say that?
I don't want to talk about your marriage. I don't want to talk about your... I want to talk about a substantive point that your husband, George Conway, made. He was on television all day yesterday during the first day of the impeachment hearings, and he said this about the president of the United States. I just want your reaction.
He brought up, there are issues with your husband. Do you read that? How do you read that?
I mean, it sounds like a rookie mistake, but he's the opposite of a rookie.
Totally.
So I think he wanted to talk about her marriage. Otherwise, he just gave her the easiest out in the world to not answer his substantive question, which is a major rookie mistake. Don't give the person the distraction. They can come up with one if they want to, but...
And she's good at fielding that question. She's good at how dare you.
And now they're not going to
get into my personal life, right?
And now they're not going to get the answer that they were looking for because they're talking about, you know, the issues that he doesn't want to talk about.
Did
well,
you
then
read
don't
it,
say issues.
Did you read it as sexist? Did you read it as offensive, the way he said it?
No.
People took to social media and were upset about this. They thought you wouldn't ask a man this, or that, you know, that she shouldn't have been asked this, or why would you bring that up? Is that fair?
I don't know that he wouldn't ask a man that. I did not hear it that way either. Do I think he was fishing for something that was, you know, a little provocative? I think maybe, you know. He also probably had some issue of substance he was trying to get to and was just real clumsy getting there.
I don't hear it as sexist either, because I think if he were interviewing George Conway, he would say the same thing.
I think so, yeah.
With the word Kellyanne instead of George. I mean, I think that's just their marriage is, you know.
So unusual.
Fascinating.
I mean, fascinating, and I don't know what he was referencing there. Was he referencing that there had been stories in D.C. news that they were not getting along, or was he sort of saying that, you know, you're just both polarized versions of each other when it comes to politics? You're so far out there.
Husband's on Twitter flaming your boss.
Right.
I mean, every day.
It seems like we're all curious about it, right?
Right.
We all
so
want to know, like, what? How does that work? I mean, I work with couples who can disagree on things of much less substance than that.
And still have major problems. Yes. I have these problems all the time. Clip number two.
Why? And why are you doing that?
Because he's a legal scholar. He's a lawyer. And he was really going after the president of the United States. And he was all over television yesterday.
And come on. And he's married to me?
But, you know, he happens to be married to you. What's wrong with that?
You can run the clip of Jeffrey. He happens to be married to me. That's bizarre.
Correct.
Oh, boy. Seemed like, you know, you were sort of trying to clean it up a little bit, too. But you picked it out on purpose, right?
Right.
You picked that clip out.
This is the first and last time I'll ever say this in my entire life. But I'm kind of with Kellyanne on this one.
I am, too. I have to admit. Like, you know, in a way, I think she's handled that perfectly. And you can hear Wolf is backing down. Like, I think he's afraid of getting into some feminist landmine here.
Right.
He doesn't know his way out.
He's like, oh, I'm stepping into it.
Is married a modern term? Have I just... Oh, dear. John King!
We have one
bring
more,
me a map!
One more clip. Let's see if Wolf can clean it up here real quick.
You could just play the CNN clip where Jeffrey Toobin said, it's a problem that, Taylor and Kent never met Donald Trump. He said to Jake, it's a problem.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Jake Tapper said something
I'm not disagreeing,
you know,
with either of them.
They might have to meet the whistleblower, at least talk to him or her. You have to be able to confront your accused.
Right.
Dr. John, you must run into this in therapy sessions as a clinical psychologist. People, when one spouse thinks or one partner thinks that they have a real big point, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
What is that?
Right.
And
right,
they say,
right.
Oh, I didn't mean that.
It's the rope-a-dope method of marriage therapy to just, like, wait you out and, you know, like, I don't know what you're talking about. And like, can we move on to something that matters, even though this is the thing that matters?
Right.
Do we have time for one last final clip to see if Wolf bails himself out? Ella, are we good? Okay, we got it real quick.
Excellent.
But you should not have said to your audience, I don't want to talk about your marriage, quote, I know there are issues. Why would you say that? What is it?
I don't want to talk about
your
marriage.
Why would you say there are issues?
Listen to what your husband said. I'll play the clip.
Poor Wolf. I'm feeling for him there. I think he just stepped into it.
I don't know if he stepped out of it.
I think he did. I think he's still he's in firmly it. In there. He just, he didn't get out of it. But it's really, I mean, it's just, it's amazing to see. Some people are texting in to say, well, who is that? That's Kellyanne Conway, who's spokeswoman for the president. She's married to George Conway. Many people know. Maybe you've heard that he was on MSNBC. He was talking against the president while during the first impeachment inquiry was going on. He's a very vocal critic of the president's, and so it seemed as if Will Plitzer was asking kind of about their marriage there, and she's like, what?
He for sure was.
And she capitalized on that moment to call him out. I think that was a reasonable thing to do.
Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, Chicago Tribune columnist, Heidi Stevens, thank you so much for coming by, talking to us about all these issues. We appreciate it. Good seeing you guys, and happy weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having us.
Much more coming up here on WGN Radio. We will be doing The Bright Side, even though John is not here. John is back Monday. Of course, you can catch him on his show tomorrow as well. I should mention Heidi Stevens and John Duffy. You can catch their podcast here on WGN Radio as well. You can check that out, where John told me before, which is...
On Purpose.
On Purpose.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life.
Oh, Ken.
Ken, you're up.
Always look on the light side of life.
No, he's letting us down today.
There we go. Let's hear you, Kev.
There's something you forgot, and that's to laugh and smile. And
there's a lot of pressure for the whistle.
I already whistled.
I was going to say, I didn't hear you. That's a good one.
Am I still whistling?
Yes, please, because I didn't hear it.
I'm screwing this whole thing up. John normally goes, go ahead, Kev. So I don't know what we're doing here. Can we just get to the bright sides?
My bright side was that. That was great.
Do you have a bright side, Lauren?
I actually do. It's nothing not anything big, but I have a hair appointment tomorrow, and I, haven't had my hair done since September, so.
You going to do something crazy? You going to go purple? No?
No, I don't think that would be, looked upon with, good graces around here.
630, my bright side. I got the whole bag of Gardetto's garlic rye chips all to myself.
Yum.
I love those too.
Those are really good.
The rye chips, and you don't see them everywhere either. It's 815, my bright side is WGN coming to my Christmas party because she invited some of us, and so we're game. She has a drama free holiday party. Who's ever heard of that?
Yeah, no, I didn't know those existed.
Yeah, it's like, hello.
Rare breed.
You can get what do we have here? We've got line 2. Gene, do you have a bright side? Share it with us. You're on WGN Radio. Gene?
Air Force, which he's been wanting to do since sixth grade.
Repeat the beginning, Gene. You got cut off there. I'm sorry.
Sorry, my grandson?
Yeah?
Enlisted in the Air Force.
Ooh, all right.
Which he's been wanting to do since sixth grade.
Sixth grade.
Wow.
How about that? You should be proud, Gene.
Yeah.
That
was
awesome. Awesome to hear. I'll tell you what, I'm going to get out and enjoy the city this weekend because it just feels like after what we sort of went through early in the week, I'm just ready to enjoy it all. We have another one. Sullivan.
My bright side is that I sang my own song last night. It was my debut of my own songwriting.
You did?
At the store at a show that I did with my band.
Oh, nice.
My first show.
And Aleph got the best reviews ever. You played a little version for us. We were going to put it on air, but it just was hard. It was the instrumental was overpowering you.
It was an iPhone recorded video.
Yes, which was too bad because it was amazing. Thanks. Not only did you perform it, but you wrote it, too. So it's really incredible.
Thank you.
Aleph has a beautiful voice, so I bet it's really good.
She does. My Bright Side, 608. I survived a ruptured appendix.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's painful.
Congratulations. I'm so happy, Kevin. Wow. That's something to be happy about this weekend.
That's scary.
815, I saw Hamilton last night.
Oh, I'm finally going to go see that.
You got to get in there.
Yeah, I'm going to go around Christmas time with my family. I'm very excited. I feel really late to the game.
Yes, but go see it. It really is fun. Karen, you're on WGN Radio. What is your bright side?
My bright side is that I finished my second children's book, and it's about angels. And funny, Hamilton comes up in my book. There's two guinea pigs, and their names are Alexandra and Hamilton. It's called Snow Angels. My first book is called Angels on Your Pillow, and it's all about how God loves everybody so much and to help children feel safe and special.
Oh, that is a bright side for all of us. We'll need to read that book.
Look on the light side of life.
What an accomplishment. I can't imagine the work that goes into writing a book.
It really is. And such a positive book. You're spreading positivity as well.
We need that.
Thank you, Karen. That's a beautiful bright side.
Got an 847. My bright side is I was told I was working tonight on 294. Then they got me covered because I worked all day. Oh, that's a nice relief when you're like, okay, I get to relax.
My bright side, my son got engaged on the Michigan Avenue Bridge last night.
Oh, beautiful.
I bet the pictures look great.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful place to do it.
That wow, that's awesome.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I want to be proposed there. No, I'm kidding. Lisa, so we have some entries that were given to us on Facebook for Joint Relief Institute-sponsored Bright Side of Life pins. And I chose four winners this week. Lisa Smith-Fulton, Tucker, Amanda, and Joanne. Tucker adopted a cat.
Aww.
Lisa celebrated a weekend in Mexico with 10 high school pals celebrating their 50th birthdays.
Oh, wow, plural. That's awesome.
And Amanda says that her daughter, Ashlyn, is turning 16 this weekend, spending the day in Schaumburg having lunch with Aunt Brenda and doing some much-needed shopping. And Joanne...
Girls' weekend. Love it.
Fun stuff, yeah.
Joanne took her 10-year-old granddaughter to see Aladdin and... Aladdin the play, and she just loved watching her smile as she watched it.
Aww.
Aaron from Chicago, my bright side, celebrating 22 years today with my husband, Pat. Tonight, we'll be celebrating by freezing our butts off together, cheering on our older son, Mickey, as the St. Patrick Shamrocks take on St. Lawrence for the Chicago Prep Bowl.
Ooh, good luck.
That sounds like a fun weekend you got in store. My son will leave from Navy in December for Christmas, coming home.
Oh, that's nice when they can come back for the holidays.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. We've got another one here. We've got Jan. You're on WGN Radio. What's your bright side?
My bright side is that my husband and I leave for Arizona for the winter on Sunday.
Woo! It's gonna be warm.
Yeah.
We will be warm.
Send some of it our way.
Wait, are you gonna be here for the holidays then, Jan? Are you're not gonna come back?
We come back for Christmas because we have two young grandchildren.
Oh,
that's nice.
That's awesome.
So we come back for them and then we head back in January.
Send some warmth our way and enjoy,
please.
Jan. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the bright side. My five-year-old is better, 815, after battling mono.
Oh, no.
I know so many little kids right now that I've got little upper respiratory things going on.
We had that bug around the office.
Yes.
I think finally, I haven't heard of anyone recently sick, so I think hopefully it made its rounds.
Thank you. I'm very happy to hear that. What else we have here? They've got me covered. Oh, you read that one. It got me covered because I worked all day. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. Share your bright sides.
I think my other bright side is that the ice rinks are also open. Once you mentioned that earlier today.
Didn't you just feel like, hey, I might go out and check that out?
Yeah. Again, because like you said, it's finally warmer now. And it's just going to get colder, so you might as well take advantage of it while it's not brutal.
Well, and we've already this year felt the taste already early on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We know what it is, but when you feel it that early on, you sort of appreciate the 30s, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah,
yeah.
It feels way warmer. So as opposed to just kind of sinking into the 30s and being miserable, I think that we kind of thickened our skin a little bit.
Kim, you've got a bright side in news
I
for
do.
Us?
I want to send a shout out to my nephew who turns 12 today, and we're going to Japanese cooking chop 'em up board for dinner.
Oh, the place where they cook at the cooking table.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah. Really fun.
Oh, I love that place too.
They always get me when they fake squirt something.
Oh,
at
right
my face.
With the ketchup.
Or they take a shrimp and they like you throw it into your face or something.
And then you open your mouth and they try to put broccoli in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like toss it in.
That is so cool. My Bright Side 773 is almost a year of me meeting Ro and Anna in person.
Oh, fun.
I wonder if that was at the Christmas event. Yeah, it could be the Christmas party. Well, great.
It's a good time.
Come on out again. Bright Side, I have this weekend off, 224, and I'm going to a craft fair.
Ooh, fun. Yeah. Now's a really good time of year with the holiday stuff starting to pop up.
We have Tom. Go ahead. You're on WGN Radio. What is your bright side on this Friday?
I retired from the Postal Service in April, Woo! And this is the first Christmas season since 1986 that I can really enjoy it. No sorting.
You know, it's got to be, you got to feel for our postal workers, our letter carriers. Yeah. I mean, this time of year, my gosh.
Not only is it extra busy, but in the cold as well, and then having to stay away from your family because of these kind of jobs.
Tom, what are you going to do to celebrate? How are you going to do it?
You know, I'm just taking it easy because, I mean, we get the Friday, you know, Black Friday. I get to enjoy that.
Are you going to go out and shop?
A little bit, not much, you know. But it's just nice that I was a clerk, so I wasn't a carrier. Mm-hmm. But when I had a flashback where they had 750 million packages we're going to sort this year, mm-hmm. and I realized that I won't be sorting. I'll be sending some out and getting some. That's a great deal.
Very nice.
That's the right side to be on it. I appreciate that. Totally. My granddaughter just added a wedding category on her Pinterest page.
Oh, that's always fun.
What's the wedding category? What does that mean?
Well, so you can kind of just create a page theme, and then when you go through posts, you can share them and post them to that theme. So if you're looking at dresses or maybe certain color schemes, rings.
You start putting it all together.
Yeah, all kinds of different things. We did that a lot for my sister's wedding when she was planning.
815, Carl, you're on WGN Radio. What is your bright side this Friday?
Moved to Arizona approximately 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. No longer have to put up with the Illinois winters. We lived in the Joliet area. No longer had to put up with the Illinois state messed up government system. Ooh. And I no longer had to pay the high property taxes.
So,
and it is now 84 degrees.
Woo! Oh, man. Oh, rub it in.
So
rub
jealous.
It in.
I am. Believe me. I am. I text all my friends back in the Joliet area and tell them what the temperature is almost every day.
Oh, Carl, that's cruel. All right, well, you enjoy Arizona. I know I would, too. Boy, that is, it's nice to be warm. It is nice to be warm. We hear about a lot of our listeners who listen to us from Arizona, too, so thank you for doing that. We certainly appreciate that. A lot to celebrate. So you're heading to the ice rink, Lauren, you think?
At some point, if I don't make it out there this weekend, I'm going to scope out the weather and try and do it within
scope
the next few weeks.
Scope things out this weekend. A lot going on. Back with more here on WGN Radio.